Leviticus chapter 6, and reading at verse 8. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command Aaron and his sons, saying, This is the law of the burnt offering. It is the burnt offering because of the burning upon the altar all night unto the morning, and the fire of the altar shall be burning in it. And the priest shall put on his linen garment, and his linen breeches shall he put upon his flesh, and take up the ashes with the fire, which the fire hath consumed with the burnt offering on the altar, and he shall put them beside the altar. And he shall put off his garments, and put on other garments, and carry forth the ashes without the camp unto a clean place. And the fire upon the altar shall be burning in it. It shall not be put out. And the priest shall burn wood on it every morning, and lay the burnt offering in order upon it, and he shall burn thereon the fat of the peace offerings. The fire shall ever be burning upon the altar, it shall never go out. We have in these verses that we've just read together the law of the burnt offering. This, of course, is not the law of the burnt offering of chapter 1 of this same book. The law of the burnt offering of chapter 1 is contained in one verse in chapter 7. Chapter 7, verse 8, where we're told that the priest that offered any man's burnt offering, to that priest there was given the skin of the offering that he had offered. But in the verses we read together in Leviticus chapter 6, we have in fact the law of the daily burnt offering. We must keep that in mind, thus it has to do with the collective worship of God's people, the law of the daily burnt offering. This daily burnt offering commenced on the occasion of the consecration of the priesthood. And thus we read in Exodus chapter 29 these words, This shall be a continual burnt offering throughout your generations. When the priests were sanctified and consecrated, this daily burnt offering commenced. This was confirmed too in the book of Numbers and chapter 28. It is a continual burnt offering which was ordained in Mount Sinai for a sweet savour, a sacrifice made by fire unto the Lord, the daily burnt offering. Now we learn from the 28th chapter of the book of Numbers that this daily burnt offering consisted of a burnt offering, a meal offering, and a drink offering. In Numbers chapter 28 we're told that morning and evening there was offered one lamb for a burnt offering, one tenth part of an ephah of fine flour mingled with a fourth part of an hin of oil for a meal offering. And then there was poured out in a holy place a drink offering of strong wine. These things took place morning and evening in connection with the children of Israel. Morning and evening, a burnt offering, a meal offering, and the drink offering. The burnt offering speaks of the sacrifice of Christ which was holy for God. Chapter 1 makes it clear it had all to be placed upon the altar. It was holy for God. When we think of the meal offering, there was a portion of it given to the priestly family. When we think of the peace offering, there's a portion given to the officiating priest, to the priestly family, to the offerer who brought the offering, and his family too could feast upon the flesh as well. In the sin offering, there was that too that was eaten by the priestly family. They shared in it. But when we think of the burnt offering, we have an offering that was holy for God. And this speaks to us of the sacrifice of Christ, which was primarily for the everlasting satisfaction of the heart of God. And I would like to say, dear brethren here today, supposing that there never had been a soul saved, God had been infinitely and eternally satisfied in the sacrifice of Calvary. That's the burnt offering, the head and the legs and the inwards placed upon the altar, holy for God. The head, he knew no sin. The legs, he did no sin. And the inwards, he knew no sin. All placed upon the altar for God. But this was accompanied with the meal offering. The meal offering that speaks of his perfect manhood, of his holy life, of his perfect service. My dear brethren, let me remind you of these important truths to which we listened yesterday. That the manhood of Christ, though perfect, it was unique. It was holy manhood, impeccably holy, impervious to sin. What must it have meant to the heart of our God that in this world from which there ascended continually the stench of sin and corruption, this young man who lived in holy manhood, from whose life there ascended to God continually an odor of rest, an odor of a sweet smell. And these things that spake of Christ's sacrifice and his life, they were offered morning and evening to God. But in addition thereto, we're told, there was a drink offering. The fourth part of an hin of strong wine was poured out in the holy place. Now, what is the significance of the drink offering? Let me remind you of this, that the drink offering was never offered with a meal offering by itself. The drink offering was never offered with an animal sacrifice by itself. The drink offering was poured out on the occasion of the offering of both an animal sacrifice and a meal offering. But what does the drink offering speak of? This drink offering of strong wine. You remember in Judges chapter 9, in the parable of the trees, we're told of wine that cheereth the heart of God and man. Wine speaks of that that brings cheer and joy to the heart of God and the heart of man. And thus, morning and evening, in connection with the burnt offering and the meal offering, there was poured out in a holy place that that speaks of gladness to the heart of God and the heart of man. I wonder what that means for you and me today. My dear brethren, this is much more than the sinner being reconciled to God. I trust in that we all rejoice today. But this is the blessed thought of you and me brought into joyful communion with God over his lovely Son. The sacrifice that he made at Calvary and the holy life that he lived here below. What communion, what fellowship to share in joy with God and with his people the wonders of that lovely Son of his, the life that he lived and the sacrifice that he made. In the law of the offering in chapter 6, we're given the reason for its name. Verse 9 says, command Aaron and his sons. This is the law of the burnt offering. It is the burnt offering because of the burning upon the altar all night unto the morning. It was called the burnt offering because it was a continual burnt offering. It was the first offering to be offered in the morning. It was the last offering to be offered in the evening. And thus, during the hours of the day and of the night, there ascended to God that column of smoke that spoke to him of the preciousness of his Son, reminding us, dear brethren, of the infinite preciousness of God's Son to God's heart. Both day and night, God would have this column of smoke ascend to him that spake to him of his Son. Perhaps as you've read through the book of Exodus in connection with the tabernacle, you've wondered why that seven times over are given details of the various parts of the tabernacle, of the curtains and of the furnishings. Details were given to Moses, committed from Moses to Bezalel and Aholiab, then given to the nation. Then when the materials are brought, there is another repetition. When the tabernacle is finished, repeated again. When the vessels are placed, again is repeated. And the tabernacle is finally reared with the seventh repetition of all the details of the tabernacle. And maybe as you've read these details, you've said, well, I've read that once already, or maybe twice already. I won't read it a third time. I won't read it a fourth time. And you wonder, now, why does God cause all of this to be repeated as it does? My dear brethren, the answer to that is just this. Every detail of that tabernacle spake of Christ. And God never tires of Christ. And thus seven times over it's repeated. And connection with the burnt offering day and night. The God who never tires of his Son. So order that. That column of smoke should ascend as sweet incense into his nostrils. But yet another thought. In connection with the burnt offering, with the great truth of our acceptance. In the burnt offering, it's atonement with a view to acceptance. In the sin offering, it's atonement with a view to forgiveness. In the burnt offering, it's what went up as a sweet savour. In the sin offering, it's what's put away from the sight of God our sins. And thus, day and night, there ascended to God that spake to him of our acceptance before God. Thus, while Israel slept, even during the night watches, there ascended to God that spake of their acceptance. My dear brethren, how wonderful to think that our acceptance before God does not depend on our appreciation of it. And I'm not an Enoch. I don't always walk with God. But I'm glad that my acceptance doesn't depend on whether or not I'm walking with God. May we all be encouraged to walk with God. But let us remember that it's not our appreciation of the truth of acceptance. But whether we're going on well or not going on well, we're still accepted before God. And thus, day and night, there ascended to God the sweet savour of the offering that spake of Israel's acceptance. Now, verses 10 and 11, we have the twofold activity of the priest in connection with the ashes. In verse 10, he takes the ashes and he places them beside the altar, having put on these linen garments. Then in verse 11, having put off these linen garments and put on other garments, he carried his ashes out of the camp unto a clean place. I have no doubt, dear brethren, in my mind, that what was done with the ashes here speaks of the activity of that man Joseph of Arimathea. Matthew speaks of him as a rich disciple. Mark speaks of him as an honourable counsellor who waited for the kingdom. Luke says he's a good man and just. John says he was a secret disciple. And this priest, first of all, he took the ashes from the altar and laid them beside the altar. That was the first action. Then he took the ashes without the camp to a clean place, and there they were deposited. Let me remind you of what Joseph of Arimathea did. He took the body down from the cross. I've no doubt, with a broken, touched, affectionate heart, tenderly he took that body down from that shameful tree, took the ashes from the altar, placed them beside the altar, and then together with Nicodemus, they wound that blessed body in those linen cloths and laid it in a new sepulchre, a clean place where another man before had been laid. The Jews had made this request of Pilate, that they break their legs and take the bodies away. They would have removed all trace of that man on that central tree. Having given to him a felon's death, they would have given to a felon's burial. God said, thus far and no further. They made his grave with the wicked, but he was with the rich man in his death because he did no violence, neither was deceit found in his mouth. And little did those Jews think, when they would have removed all trace of Jesus, have broken his legs and put him away out of sight, that God had already decreed how his Son must be buried. And little did they appreciate that even then, standing by, there were two men, Joseph and Nicodemus. Joseph, who owned the place, Nicodemus, who had the lovely perfume. And even the very garden where Jesus had been crucified, there was a new sepulchre. Another man had been laid in it. It was there by divine arrangement. God had said it, thus it must be. And here we have it, here in the law of the burnt offering. But notice now the details here. The fire had ever to be kept burning. Verse 13. the fire shall ever be burning on the altar. It shall never go out. When you turn to Leviticus chapter 9, you remember that the fire that burned on Israel's altar, God sent it down from heaven. The last verse of chapter 9 says, "And there came a fire out from before the Lord, and consumed upon the altar the burnt offering and the fat, which when the people saw, they shouted and fell on their faces." God sent the fire down from heaven. And here in Leviticus chapter 6, the instruction was given that the fire had ever to be kept burning. The fire must be kept burning. Now I want to bring this to a close on a very practical issue. Notice now, my dear brethren, two expressions. Verse 12, "And the fire upon the altar shall be burning in it. It shall not be put out." That fire must not be put out. But in verse 13, it's a different expression. "The fire shall ever be burning upon the altar. It shall never go out." It had not to be put out, and it must never go out. What would the difference be? It must not be put out by a willful act. Secondly, it must never go out by carelessness or by negligence. My dear brother, and I want to say a little word in this connection. One of the things about which I yearn more than anything is a good breaking of bread in these days. I'm convinced of this, that in many places the fire has been put out. How can it be put out? There are dear, well-meaning brethren who would tell us who we must worship and who only we must worship, how we must worship, when we must break the bread, what hymns we can sing and what hymns we cannot sing. And by their harsh treatment of the subject of worship, the fire has been put out. Other areas to which I go, the thing has become so professional. Everything goes like clockwork, but there's no soul. There's no spiritual atmosphere. And I believe by reason of organization, the fire has been put out. Brethren, we want to see to it that nothing we do will ever put the fire out and cause the incense to cease from ascending to God. Other places, by reason of the fact that there has been allowed, unjudged, public, proven sin, it's apparent the fire has been put out. God wants it to ascend continually. Remember the language of Hebrews chapter 13, verse 16. Verse 15. "By him therefore let us offer the sacrifice of praise to God continually." That is the fruit of our lips confessing to his name. God wants it to ascend continually. Never let us, by a deliberate act, put the fire out. But there is the serious danger that by negligence we can allow it to go out. By carelessness, lack of exercise, lack of communion, we come along and it's become a matter of form, and gradually the fire is going out. So much for us collectively. Just a little word on individual responsibility in this connection. My dear brother, my dear sister, when God saved you, he sent a fire down out of heaven into your heart. And he expects you to keep that fire burning. You weren't saved primarily to serve. You were saved primarily to worship. And that's important, young man, today. I'm afraid with many of our young men, as soon as they're saved, they're beginning to read in order to preach. With this, that when they read, they're reading with a view to passing on something to somebody else for the help of others. Young brother, young sister, you read primarily for your own good and your own spiritual profit, that divine impressions might be made in your heart and keep the fire burning so it was something for the heart of God. But don't put it out. Some of God's people have put the fire out by a willful act of disobedience. I had the joy some years ago in London of seeing a whole family saved. One of these was a dear young girl of about 15 or 16. Dear Patricia, from the moment she was saved, she began to read, developed spiritually in a wonderful way, never missed a meeting. But last year she decided she must be married. She kept company with a young man, and she said to me that he saved and told others beside. But on interrogation I discovered that in fact he was never saved. And I told her. The elders warned her against it. Her father pled with her with regard to it and refused in fact to go to the wedding. But she willfully disobeyed. That lovely young sister, whose shining face I can see even now, when the saints gather together, she's not there. My brother, my sister, God desires from you and from me the best. He expects that we should keep ever burning the fire that he sent into our hearts. Let us see to it that never by willful act we'll put it out. It may be in your business you have decisions to make. I pray you, my brother, be it in your business or in your home, never by a willful act of disobedience cause the fire in your heart to go out, for I repeat, God desires nothing but the best. But then by negligence, we can cause the fire to go out. And I want to speak to my heart as I would speak to yours. It's so easy to be negligent. Oh, when we were first saved, we never thought of going to work in the morning without reading the scriptures and praying to our God. And the last thing at night, it was the same. But months rolled past, it became every second day. Soon every third day. Soon once a week. And thus it has gone on. We never thought of missing a prayer meeting or a Bible reading. But our conscience is not quite the same with regard to these things. We've developed other interests. And by carelessness and negligence, it may be the fire today is very low. It's going out. Well, we've come to the close of another year. Almost its close. I appeal to you, and I speak to my own heart as well. My brother, my sister, God desires from you and me something better than that. He desires from you and me nothing but the best. Oh, let's go in more and more with this joyful communion of sharing with God the wonders of his blessed, his lovely Son.